This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Trainer Todd Fletcher has reached the stratosphere.
It was all have another for Doug O'Neill.
Moon over Miami for Bill Mott.
$3,000 for trainer Mark Cassie.
Trainer D-Way Lucas, a 6th win.
And Bob Baffert with another incredible milestone.
But it was all for Scott McGahee.
Win number 1,000 for the great Trevor McCarthy.
Here's 2,000 for Nick Zito.
Steve Aspison is now North America's all-time leading trainer.
Now here's Mike Penna.
Hello again, everyone. I'm Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, welcoming you to Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. This is the show trainers listen to, and you are listening all across North America and around the world on Sirius 162 XM 207, streaming worldwide at horseracingradio.net and available anywhere you get your podcasts each and every week. In a little more than 72 hours from right now, a talented field of three-year-old thoroughbreds is going to emerge from the tunnel at Churchill Downs to the playing of my old Kentucky home, just moments away from their mile-and-a-quarter journey in the 150th renewal of the Run for the Roses. In about 48 hours, one destined three-year-old filly will be standing in the winner's circle beneath the Twin Spires, draped in a garland of lilies after conquering this year's Kentucky Oaks. With that in mind, you're going to hear from five trainers on today's show who are preparing their horses for those two races, four Derby trainers and one trainer looking ahead to Friday's Kentucky Oaks. That is Val Brinkerhoff, the trainer of Kentucky Oaks contender Where's My Ring, who will be first out of the gate here on today's show, followed by Phil D'Amato talking about his Santa Anita Derby winner Stronghold. Danny Gargan will then discuss his Derby duo, Doorknock and Society Man. You'll then hear from four-time Derby winner and five-time Kentucky Oaks winner D'Wayne Lucas. The legendary Hall of Famer is getting set to saddle Lemon Muffin in Friday's Oaks and Just Steel in the Run for the Roses. And we also continue, don't forget, to celebrate Winning Colors Week, presented by Keeneland Sales here on HRRN. And Wayne will spend some time looking back on that memorable day in 1988 when his talented filly beat the boys under Gary Stevens, giving Wayne the first of those four Derby victories. And we'll wrap it all up here today with Chad Brown to share some insight into Bluegrass Stakes winner Sierra Leone and Tampa Bay Derby winner Domestic Product. All of those conversations you're about to hear took place this week at Churchill Downs on our Derby Countdown shows with Bobby Newman and Jude Feld. And I'll encourage you to check out the podcast of those Derby Countdown programs on our website, horseracingradio.net, and on all podcast outlets to hear a whole bunch more Oaks and Derby conversation. Without further ado, Kentucky Oaks trainer Val Brinkerhoff to kick it off here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton.
Pleased to be joined now by trainer Val Brinkerhoff. It doesn't always work out as well as you plan it, but it certainly did that day for Where's My Ring.
Yeah, it was. We entered her, we nominated her in every one of the races because we had to get the points to get in, and we'd run with Baffert at Santa Anita and mile of 16th, we couldn't beat her there. I actually entered her at Oaklawn and scratched her because of the size of the field. I actually wanted to run a mile and an eighth because I think the more distance we get, the better she's going to be.
She ran a massive speed figure, too. The race was off the charts. What do you attribute that to?
You know what? I got a great ride that day. I talked with Jose in the paddock. I said she hadn't been breaking that great. We put blinkers on her. That improved her immensely. And I said, I'd like to be setting up close, and when you get to the 5/16th pole, try to swing out and get going, hit her left-handed when you get to the head of the lane. And we've been working with her on switching leads and taking off, and it just fell right into place that day.
So you don't just get out of bed and say, oh, I think I'm going to run in the Gazelle this week.
No. Well, and we didn't decide till the last minute. We had to rent the whole airplane to get her back there, and 2 days I had to get everything together, and I didn't have a groom I really wanted to take, or I couldn't take back there because I didn't have the good paperwork. But I went and got the old groom that used to take care of Restrained Vengeance for me when I had him. And we loaded up on an airplane and flew back there. We got there on Wednesday, and we run on Saturday. And She ran a massive race.
That's great when a plan comes together like that.
Yeah.
Huh? I
mean, yeah.
What gave you the confidence to run a maiden like that?
Because ever since I seen her at the sale at Keeneland, when she come out of that stall, something about her just made me. I told my wife, that's the one we need to get. There's something special about her. She's a grand looking thing and very intelligent, and it's just, I don't know what it was about her, just an air about her that made me want to buy her.
Speaking with trainer Val Brinkerhoff, who, as you mentioned, trained graded stakes winner Restrained Vengeance, was third in the Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile a few years ago. A former jockey yourself, won over 400 races during your career and been a training since 2008. All right, so now you've won the Gazelle. She's no longer a maiden, and you're really diving into the deep end. Field in the Gazelle was good. It's certainly a much stronger field, what you're going to see on Friday. What have you noticed from Where's My Ring since that victory in New York and coming here to Churchill?
Well, we worked her Friday or Saturday. I can't remember what day it was. But she'd never worked alone. I didn't have anything to work with her here. I always had to work her at Santa Anita with one of my older horses that could keep up and make her go. And I thought, well, if you can hook up with someone, try to work behind them. But she worked alone, and she worked fantastic. The best she – and she's improving every day since we got this ulcer issue taken care of. But I was so impressed with her work and her gallop out. And she gets over this track very well. It just gave me so much confidence after we worked her here the other day that we're going to be right there.
Do you have anything planned, or do you do anything with her in the days leading up as far as schooling her, because she's going to see very likely over 100,000 people on Friday?
Yeah, I took her to the paddock twice already. I took her to the gate and schooled her this morning. She weren't breaking well, so I just had them put a light tail on her, and she'd been breaking a lot better, keeping herself in contention, so we got somewhere to go, don't have to circle a field or whatever. And, yeah, I believe if you're going to be in a race, if you don't do your part on the schooling and all that and something happens, it's my fault. But once you leave the paddock, it's out of your control. So I try to do everything I can do up to that point.
Speaking of Michael, you're talking about owner Michael McMillan, who owns Where's My Ring. How did you guys get together and, you know, get together on this filly?
Well, he came over to Del Mar looking for – he wanted to get in the game. He lives right there on the ocean. Wanted to get in the game. He went to one of the offices at Del Mar. And then actually a lady I'd broke some horses for there worked there, and she took him to some of the other big-time trainers, and he didn't like the questioning he got about how much money he had and what he did for a living and stuff like that. When he come over, she said, well, go see Val Brinkerhoff. So he come over there, and I just talked, you know, about his life, let him see the horses, what we did and everything, and we kind of hit it off there, and here we are today.
So is this the first horse that Mr. McMillan has
owned? It's the first one I claimed two for him actually at Del Mar. He come over and we wanted a horse, and it was a 16,000 or 20,000 maiden claim, and I actually had a horse in the race. I said, you got any money in the office? He says, no. And I said, well, I'll claim it for you, and you can pay me back. So I claimed it, and I thought my horse would win the race, and hell, she beat me, and I run second. And she was crazy in the stall. She ran her stall, the one we claimed 9-0 all the time. I put a goat in there, and nothing seemed to help her. So another horse, I want to get a better horse. So they run one back for 25. I actually claimed that one. First time we run it, won by 6. Then we tried to go up the ladder. It started bleeding again. So I said, I don't want to have that one. So I want better horses. So I ran it for 10. It won. They claimed it. So we went back to Keeneland, and I bought 2 for him there, and then 2 in California, cowbreds at a sale. And we bought 4 or 5 more this year. And here we are today. 1 year, he's been in about a year and a half of horses. And I've, you know, something you look for your whole lifetime to get to do something like this, especially for me. And he got in, he wants to do the big things, and that's good. He's willing to push the envelope with the horses, you know, as far as where you run them and what you do. And if they're no good, he wants to get rid of them and for what he don't want to do and get something better. So been very lucky for me that he found me, I guess, or I found him or something.
It's a good deal.
Yeah.
Nice for you.
Now you just have to make sure you keep having good horses.
Well, that's it. I got one of these. I bought a McKenna filly. She's in here Thursday. I like her. We got actually behind out in California because it rained a lot and they closed the track. But she'll be right there on Thursday. She's in the third race. So
you heard it here first.
there you go. Bet your money.
What? How is this different for you getting to be out here at Churchill in Derby Week? Something that not all trainers get to see.
It's amazing. I mean, they treat you like gold here. It's a lot of places you go, they don't, you know, I'm not a big trainer. I don't have a lot of horses. They don't care if we're there or not, but they've treated us like we're gold here. They want you to be here. We're actually going to move, get some more horses to move out here. I have some for Grayson's that I bought in Kentucky. I got a couple of them here, and then we're going to try to move some more out here. Keep our cowbreds in California. There's really nothing for them here, and try to get all the Kentucky horses out here that can compete where we can maybe make some money, do a little better.
You're saddling Where's My Ring this Friday in the Kentucky Oaks. You drew post position number 3. Jose Lescano, who was aboard in the Gazelle, will be back aboard. Will you and Jose go over the race or game plan, or do you just trust that he knows what he's supposed to
do? Well, I'll just kind of tell him. We'll talk in the paddock. I know when the gate opens, everything changes from doing it myself. You got a split second to decide what you're going to do, and we'll just have to see how it goes from there. And then he'll just, if it's not what we want, go to plan B. Jose, you're on your own.
does your background, I mean, you're a third-generation horseman, but as I mentioned, you did win over 400 races as a rider. Does your background riding horses help at all with your training?
Yes, so much. You know, I can tell right away if they got something wrong with them. It's hard to tell for a lot of people if they got something wrong behind, in their hind end, and I can pick that kind of stuff up right away. So hopefully we don't do no more damage if they got something wrong. Give them the time off or see what we got to do to help them out that way. Then I can kind of tell how far they're going to run. If they got a breathing problem, I can pick that up right away. Like if they got blisters or something, they whistle when they're going down the track, or if they something, stuff like that, I can pick up pretty fast.
Being around the horses is a thing that you can't replace.
No, right? I mean, experience. I mean, I haven't had the experience at the big time like some of these guys, but they haven't had the experience I've had on having to learn stuff as you go along either.
Well, we know that this is certainly the biggest race in a lot of these fillies' careers. It will be the biggest race in their careers. But it's not the end game. When will you and Mr. McMillan sit down and, if you haven't done it already, kind of look at what you want to do the rest of the year?
Well, we've already kind of talked about that, and we'll see how this goes. And if we win this race, you might be surprised what we're going to try next.
Uh-oh, we might see like the Belmont Stakes next for us.
Stay tuned.
You might see that if we win this race.
It seems like I'm on the right trail right there. But is this something where, you know, you're looking to say, okay, our goal is the Breeders' Cup Distaff at Del Mar. How are we going to get from point A to point B?
Exactly. After this race, I wouldn't want to run her too much at Pimlico, too fast back. Maybe we'll try her in Belmont. I don't know. But we're going to definitely try to get to Del Mar. That's his hometown for the Breeders' Cup. And I think she'll run on the turf as good as the dirt. I tried her once, but the pace was so slow that she couldn't make up any ground there at Santa Anita. But I think she will now. She's come around full circle from that race.
She actually did make up like 5 or 6 lengths, but she wasn't really she didn't impact the win, but she did make up like 5 or 6 lengths that day.
Yeah, she ran, had to circle the whole field. She didn't break from the gate, and she was the only one running at the end, but the race weren't far enough or fast enough for her. We got fourth, but that's not good enough.
Well, Val, we really appreciate you taking the time. We know this is something that you don't get to do every year. We are really thrilled to get to speak with you for the first time, and hopefully we'll speak to you in the next week or two after you're a Kentucky Oaks winner, my friend.
That'll be great. I'll come and talk to you.
Similar to Val Brinkerhoff is trainer Phil D'Amato, who is preparing to saddle his first starter in the Kentucky Derby.
Phil, you've been maybe unfairly pigeonholed throughout your career as being a turf trainer, and although you have a whole lot of success on the turf, you are now diving into the deep end, and you're in the biggest race, certainly in this country, if not the world. It was Stronghold running in Kentucky Derby 150. First of all, as far as Stronghold goes, I mean, he looks like a dream horse to train. He just never runs a bad race.
Yeah, he's very consistent. You know, he's run on the 6 different racetracks, finished no worse than second, you know, so he kind of shows up every time. And I just like his progression from race to race, physically and mentally. You know, he's getting better, and with you know, further distance. So all those things, you know, put together is making me you know, feel good this week.
You had to feel pretty good after winning the San Diego Derby. I mean, that's like a dream come true for a California guy, right? I mean,
oh yeah, no, to win the California the San Diego Derby, and you know, defeat the head honcho over there, you know, it was a really good feeling, and you know, like the way the horse did it, and the determination he showed, you know, sitting behind horses, shooting through a hole. All those things, you know, made it even more extra special.
He's a dandy-looking horse, too. I mean, he's got the big rear end, and he's, you know, kind of bulky, and but he's very athletic-looking. I mean, just got to love the way he is.
Yeah, no, he, you know, and it's just like he's just kind of, it's one of those things, he's just blossoming before, you know, our eyes here, just steadily getting strong, bigger and stronger, and I just, you know, love the way he's doing. And mentally, I mean, he's a pro. He loves attention at the barn, and yet, you know, you get him on the track, and he's all business.
Is a mile and a quarter any sort of a question for him? He certainly looked good at a mile and a 16th and a mile and an eighth.
I really don't think distance is a problem. I breezed him the other day, 5/8 here with Talamo, and, you know, he was 59 and change feet in the dashboard. He'd come back, and cooling out, he didn't even take a sip of water. As a horseman, in this situation with these big races, with the breeze like that, and all taking all those things into consideration, those are the things that tell you, you know, this horse is racing, fit, all cylinders go. And I just the way he gallops out in his races, he's never, you know, not, you know, kept extending past the wire. So I think it'll be fast, definitely fast on Derby Day, and that won't hurt either.
He's by Go Zapper. Yeah, great horse. I mean, one of maybe the best of all time. Didn't have a long career, but a very storied career. That's got to help him, too. I mean, that legacy that he has.
I think so. You know, and he's out of a good mare. I mean, by a good sire, out of a good mare. I trained that mare, Spectator. She was a great at stake winner for me. Very tenacious filly. You know, she was able to go two turns. She placed in the Santa Anita Oaks, you know, two turns to a really nice Midnight Bisou, who turned out to be not too shabby. So, you know, putting those two together and getting this nice foal here is you know, really definitely helped the cause for the Wallers and myself.
Based in Southern California, but you decided not to go the route of the Bob Lewis or the San Felipe. You went out to Sunland, ran in the Sunland Derby instead before going to the Santa Anita Derby. How did that decision come about?
I just thought the spacing was really good. I mean, the money was really good, but I'd squeezed two races into him really close to each other from his two-year-old, you know, at the end of his two-year-old campaign, 7/8 at Del Mar, and then we went straight back like 3 weeks later into the Los Al Futurity. So between there, I kind of wanted to, you know, give him a little time to breathe and develop, and it just worked out. I thought the Sunland race was, you know, right up his alley. So, you know, we took advantage of that, and he was able to break through there. And I think that point on, he's just really, you know, excelled in his training.
You can always tell a sheets guy when they talk about spacing. Are you a sheets guy?
I will definitely, yeah. I definitely look at the sheets, you know, rags, thoroughgraphs. I look at them all. Very good info for not just handicappers, but trainers as well.
Do you use them as part of your daily routine?
A little bit, yeah. No, I do. Definitely, I'm looking to see, you know, where we fit and how we're progressing along or not, you know, and, you know, use that tool definitely to place your horses.
Speaking with Phil D'Amato, who trains Santa Anita Derby champ Stronghold, breaking from post position 17 now. Drew 18, but moving in now with the defection of Encino yesterday. Antonio Frasu, who's been aboard for his last four starts, is going to once again have the mount in this year's Kentucky Derby. Frasu is a guy that if you're not somebody that follows Southern California racing or maybe Northern California racing before that, you maybe don't know too much about, but he has really taken Southern California by storm the last, especially the last year and a half, 2 years or so. What have you seen in him that gives you confidence that this is not too big of a stage?
You know, I mean, those European riders, are they ride everywhere. They have to take their game from track to track all the time. And he was in Dubai for a long time running, you know, riding in those big races for years. And, you know, he's ridden in the Dubai World Cup and all that. And you know, he's just been one of the top riders there. But when he came to California, he came with a bang. I mean, he was winning on the dirt, the turf, left, right, and center. And we just clicked. You know, he kind of have similar kind of personalities, and we're not, you know, the way we think about the game as well, and how we want, you know, our look at, to have our horses ridden. I mean, we kind of think alike that way as well, and we've had a lot of success together.
He really has been impressive. I mean, he can ride on the lead from behind. He's very adjustable guy, dirt, turf, like you mentioned. And I heard, and I don't know if this is true, you might know, Doug O'Neill was the one that kind of like forced his hand to come to the U.S.
Yeah, no, Doug O'Neill and Tom Knust, I think Doug, yeah, was definitely a major player there. Doug had horses over there in Dubai. I know Doug and Leandro liked him over there. And Tom Knust said, hey, I'm looking to potentially get this guy, you know, from Dubai, watch his races. And before he came over here, so I was, you know, I watched him. I liked how he sat on a horse, how he finished, where he placed him, and slowly but surely started to use him, and kind of had success right off the bat with him.
Stronghold's a horse that been forwardly placed in all six of his career starts. He doesn't have to have the lead, but he certainly doesn't look like he wants to come from the clouds. You're slotted just outside the Derby favorite, Fierceness. Is this a situation where if all goes well, you're kind of following him around the track?
I would imagine so. You know, I think we're good out of the gate. So, and we're good with kickback in our face. But I told Antonio, I mean, the most logical thing would be to follow Fierceness going into that first turn and then kind of, you know, lay into a good spot there and just off and, you know, see how the race develops from there. But I don't think the horse minds kick back in his face. He's perennially been a good actor in the gate and good horse out of there. So I think all those things should hopefully lead us to a good position going into the first turn.
Yeah, that's always crucial, and they get to going really fast the first quarter usually. Everybody's all keyed up, and yeah. But Antonio seems like he'll be nice and cool and relaxed. He won't do anything crazy.
I don't think so. We've kind of talked about this race. You know, he actually came early this morning and galloped him, you know, the horse. So he's going to do the same thing again tomorrow just to really get a feel for him over this surface and everything, and hopefully all those things help to get him in a nice cozy position in the first part of the race.
Why is he being ignored? Why aren't people betting on him?
I think it's it's I'm the new face bringing a dirt horse in from California.
Oh, you're blaming yourself.
Yeah, and, you know, I don't mind that for one bit.
I hope they don't know who Phil D'Amato is, because I do.
Yeah, a lot of good horses have come out of from winning the Santa Anita Derby to win the Kentucky Derby, so you know none of those things bother me. It's par for the course, but like I said, we'll take it and use it to our advantage, and stay under the radar.
Yeah, well, it's good to be under the radar sometimes, especially in a big race like this, right? Yeah,
definitely,
they
ignore you. Don't want that bullseye on your back.
Yeah.
Well, Phil, we really appreciate you taking the time. We know that you have a hectic schedule here in Kentucky, but we wish you nothing but the best and hope you get a perfect trip on Saturday, and we'll see what happens with Stronghold.
Thank you guys so much. I appreciate it.
Trainer Danny Gargan is making his second appearance in the Kentucky Derby, and he'll have two chances to pull it off on Saturday, Door Knock and Society Man.
Danny Gargan now on the show. Danny, not only one runner in the Kentucky Derby, Door Knock, but you've got Society Man as well. One drawn inside, one toward the outside. Man, this has got to be an exciting time of year. There's a lot of people will never, ever have the experience of having a horse in the Kentucky Derby, and you've got two.
Yeah, it's pretty special. You know, it's our third starter in, I think, 5 years. No, we're blessed because we're a smaller stable. We get about 14, 15 two-year-olds. And we had five colts that were not New York bred. So, so out of those five, to have two of them make it to the Derby is really amazing. And they were the only two colts that I bought at Kingland. And that's pretty amazing. There was a group of us working at Kingland together that year, Scott Everett, Megan Jones, Connor Foley, and me. And, you know, for all of us to work hard and come up with these two horses to get to the Derby out of such small samples, pretty astonishing. And it's a lot of luck, and we're blessed.
Yeah, how's that to pick two horses out of Kingland, which is what, like 5,000 or 6,000 horses, and have them both be in the Derby? That's awesome.
Yeah, it's the first year that I really focused on the pedigrees before I bought them. We have, you know, Megan does the pedigree stuff for me. And me and Connor and Scotty and all, you know, everybody worked hard. Nick Esler was there shortlisting. So it was a group of us and everybody out there. And I was there every day. And, you know, it's pretty shocking and pretty amazing. And like I said, for a small outfit, you know, to be in our situation is pretty crazy.
Got to get a little lucky once in a while, huh?
Yeah. We've been, you know, we're pretty blessed. The year before, we won the Remsen the year before and the Nashua both. And our young horses since, I think the big edge is when I started training them at Saratoga and early getting up there and training my young horses at Saratoga. The surface is wonderful there. There's quite a few horses that trained all summer at Saratoga. Todd trains his two-year-olds there, Chad does, and me. So, there's all of us train up there, and there's a lot of Derby starters that started at Saratoga that's made it here, and I think that's a big say to the track, and the track superintendent, Glenn, does a phenomenal job. It's great tracks to train on.
Speaking with trainer Danny Gargan, who sends out both Door Knock and Society Man in this year's Kentucky Derby, they've taken different paths to get to the Derby, and I would say maybe different expectations going in. I was hearing rumors about Door Knock before his first race at Saratoga. He seemed to be at one of those good things where the rumor was out that this horse was supposed to be a runner. It wasn't just because that he was a full brother to Mage, but the word was out, and he actually didn't win his first time out. He didn't win his second start either. On the other side, you have Society Man, who was a big long shot, I think, the first few races of his career and really didn't show a whole lot those races, and he's just somehow really picked it up the last two starts.
Well, you know, Door Knock was real precocious for a big horse. First time out, we gave him a race just to get him started. It was a sprint. He's not a sprinter. We thought he'd win the race at Monmouth, and he broke a little slow. The horse inside him bolted, and he ended up about 15 wide in the first turn and went from last to first down the backside and ran a little green. And he just needed two turns. And, you know, that's how, you know, a lot of people liked him train, and he's a big, beautiful horse. He stands out. And Society Man, he trained with Door Knock a lot as a young horse, and we made a determination after his first race he was a little acting up and wasn't just focusing on anything. We sent him to the farm at GPM. The other owners, they have a farm in Saratoga, and Gary gelded him for me. And we left him out there and let him mature a little bit, and we brought him back, and off that, you know, he ran 5.5 or 6, I think, first time out. Then we put him in a mile in an eighth race, and just getting back started, and I thought he ran pretty credible that day. Obviously, I liked him how he ran because I put him in the withers thinking he'd be 1, 2, 3 because he was training with Door Knock, and I was like, well, let's give his horse a chance because he can have some talent going long, and he broke in a tangle that day, really didn't get much of a trip, and didn't have any chance at all, so it was a little frustrating. I was a little disappointed, but he come out of that race and ran a really, really good maiden race. He was impressive winning it. I know it said only 3 lengths, but he just was he swung by the field and was a pulled up winner. And he come back in the wood and ran the same race, and You know, if he gets a little trip, that horse, he's interesting to me. Just on sheets, he's going the right way, and he's a horse that's blossoming at the right time. So he's a horse that shows up, and if he shows up, he could be anywhere here.
What's the process when you have a horse like that that you think is good and he's not really performing up to expectations? I mean, what do you try to do to change it around so he fits into what you have in mind for him?
Well, we're not a first-time out winning operation. So the first race we run them, we're just trying to educate them and get them going. We have very few first-time starters win. That's not what we're looking for. So, I mean, if you looked at, I think Cody's Wish got beat his first three starts, right? I mean, Bill does kind of the same thing, and I've been watching him over the years and years. The thing is, you got to let a horse try to develop itself and not force him to be a sprinter or something he's not. And if you have a horse that needs time and needs to mature and get better, you know, you have to give him the opportunity and try to keep him sound and healthy till they, you know, if they do blossom. So we're lucky. The gelding, I think cutting, making him a gelding has made the big advantage, the change in him. And, you know, we're blessed that he, you know, showed the talent that we've been expecting out of him his last couple races.
Dornock is certainly going to be the one of the two that gets more of the action at the betting windows, although he is 20-1 on the morning line coming off that fourth-place finish in the Bluegrass. A couple things with Dornock, your thoughts on drawing the inside post, and a lot made of the trip or what you guys tried to do last time out in the Bluegrass, and your comments as far as maybe changing things up in the
we're not doing that again. Yeah, we're gonna break Ron in and get him out of there where he's, you know, at his best. You know, we wanted to educate him, been trying to school him a little bit in races, but we're not gonna put him in behind horses. You know, Louis doesn't want to do that, and I don't want to do it after watching it. So, like I said, we're, you know, the one-hoe isn't the same one-hoe it's been over the years. People, you know, are all panicked about the one-hoe. This one-hoe's a different one-hoe. And there's no speed in the two, three, or four, I don't think. So if we break and get it, you know, come out running, we should be able to get right up there and be up close. You know, it, I think it's probably, you know, if it was the opposite way around and Dornock had the 20, and Society Man had the 1-0, I think it would be less of an advantage because some Society Man would break and have to shuffle way back, and who knows where he'd be. You know, he could be 20th, and because he'd get shuffled all the way back down on the rail. It can happen if you don't, you know, if you're not fast early. So, and Dornock would have had the 20. He would have had to really break fast and use himself to get over from the 20. So all he has to do is break good and get him up in the race. So if he has to use him a little bit to get position, it wouldn't be any difference in any other spot. We just have to hope he breaks good.
It's kind of nice to have Sierra Leone outside of you because he, you know, he's not going to the lead.
No.
Right? So you're going to have a nice big space and there's no rail in front of you anymore.
Right.
Like you say, it's a different one hole than it used to be. So you're going to have plenty of room to
and
run
he's,
your
you
race.
Know, he's broke from the inside pretty much every race he's run. So I don't think that part's going to phase him as much. Like you said, the big key is getting him out of the gate, hustling him up there and getting him up into his stride and let him run his stride. You know, he went 46 and change, 11 and change going a mile in eighth at Aqueduct, and that's a deep, slow track. So if he has to go 46 and change here on a fast track, I don't think it's that big of a difference. So we're going to let him come out of there running and see what happens. You know, that's, you know, we've been planning on, you know, showing speed. So, you know, from the one hole, I think we're going to be forced to show some speed.
Well, we really appreciate it. We know that you've been a busy man this week and obviously a wanted man. You mentioned it. How many interviews have Jones S. done already today? Nothing but the best of luck going this weekend with both Dornock and Society Man.
Thanks so much.
Really appreciate it. Danny Gargan, who's got not one but two runners in Kentucky Derby 150. Dornock inside, Society Man toward the outside. They are going to be taking different paths to try to get to the wire first. Dornock going to be up near the front. Society Man probably going to have to come from off the pace quite a bit. But you got to be in it to win it, and Danny Gargan is in it. He's got 10% of the field.
There you go. Like the sound of that.
I do. If you ever thought that was going to happen. Oh, 10% of the field. I think Louisville boys have a huge percentage of the field.
Yeah, you guys, you know, are tough.
Yeah,
you guys are
so,
tough.
I mean, it's something to be said about the kids that grow up around here and work every day and grew up on this backside. So I'm proud of all of us that are here.
Well, we appreciate your time. Thank you
Thanks so much.
Plenty more Kentucky Derby conversation coming up in the second half of the program. You're going to hear from the legend Dwayne Lucas and trainer Chad Brown looking for that first win in the Kentucky Derby among so many big wins that he's had in his career. That's one that's eluded him. That's next on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on HRRN.
Nominate now for this year's Fasig Tipton Selected Yearling Sales. The July Sale. A strong market for precocious and athletic yearlings that attract the sport's leading end users. Last year, 40% of yearlings sold brought $100,000 or more. The 103rd Saratoga Sale. The crown jewel of American yearling sales, Saratoga set new sale records for the second year in a row, including the highest price yearling sold in the world in 2023.
Tice upstairs, $4 million even.
New York Bred Yearlings, the number one marketplace for New York breds, held during the Saratoga race meet. Selected sales, superior results. Visit selectedyearlings.fasigtipton.com to nominate now and rise above the crowd at our 2024 Selected Yearling Sale.
Deep in the heart of horse country, from these Kentucky hills has sprung a legacy rivaled by few. From the all-time greats of yesterday to the breed-shaping bloodlines of today, our roots hold strong with the promise of tomorrow. For over a century, our passion has guided us to where we stand and everything we stand for. Claiborne Farm, the tradition continues.
Send your mare to Maryland. After she foals here, breed to one of our stallions, and your 2024 foal is eligible to be a registered Maryland bred, giving you the opportunity to earn significant bonuses. Beginning with two-year-olds of 2025, Maryland bred and Maryland sired horses will earn 40% higher breeder bonuses than out-of-state sired runners. Better stallions, better mares, Maryland breds. Learn more at MarylandThoroughbred.com.
You're listening to Winning Colors Week. All this week on HRRN.
The Keeneland September Yearling Sale is the global marketplace for thoroughbred yearlings and the world's most important thoroughbred sale. The September sale stands apart from all other auctions. It offers a critical mass of quality yearlings at all levels of the market and the largest and most diverse buying bench in the world. The success of Keeneland September graduates can be seen at the highest levels of racing worldwide. The 2024 September sale begins Monday, September 9th and runs through Saturday, September 21st. Entry deadline is May 1st.
This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Winning Colors in front. Here comes 49er on the outside. Lucas and Stevens. It's a driving finish. Winning Colors by a head. Wire to wire with Gary Stevens in the iron. It was 49er on the outside. Coming from far back at the head of the stretch to narrow the gap and lose it by only a half length. Voters all around for the show. But Winning Colors, who defeated the boys in the Santa Anita Derby by grabbing the lead and never looking back, did the same thing in the 114th running of the Kentucky Derby, and she did it in 2:02 1/5 seconds.
Dave Johnson with a call of that 1988 running of the Kentucky Derby. This is Winning Colors Week here on HRRN, presented by Keeneland Sales. And who better to talk about Winning Colors than her trainer, the legendary D. Wayne Lucas. He talked with Bobby and Jude earlier this week, and here's what he had to say about that Super Filly.
Well, I like that replay. You can run that. That makes me feel good just hearing it again.
Well, it is Winning Colors Week, presented by Keeneland Sales all week long here on the network. Wayne, that, of course, a filly who beat the boys in 1988. Before that, she won the Santa Anita Derby. When did you decide that she was good enough that you wanted to try her against boys and maybe head down the Derby path if she was good enough?
Well, we didn't do it, you know, without a lot of thought. What I had told my son, Jeff, we talked it over. I said, look, I think she's the best of the three-year-olds in the country, but here's what I think we need to do. Let's test it. So we decided that if she ran well in the Santa Anita Derby, we would run her in the Kentucky Derby. And she ran very well on the Santa Anita Derby, winning by 6 or 7, and that just sealed her trip to the Derby.
Well, you've never been one to shy away from a tough spot, so it didn't really surprise too many people when you took the chance. Were you pretty optimistic going in?
Yeah, of our four Kentucky Derby winners, that was the most confident we'd have ever been. we were really cocky confident on that one, both Jeff and I. we thought we had the best horse, and we did. But the other three, obviously, we were cautiously optimistic, but she gave us a lot of confidence. I just felt she was the best, and I knew that 49er would be the favorite, but we were really positive.
Are you still mad about the ride that Pat Day gave 49er in the Preakness, where he basically ruined the race for both 49er and Winning Colors trying to do her in?
Well, I was surprised at that, that they would sacrifice a Grade One classic like that to try to, you know, keep another horse from winning it. But Woody, at that point in his career, was very jealous of what we were doing. Later in life, we talked about that.
You think?
We became really close friends, and before he passed away, he would call me up and say, let's have lunch, and then he would tell me about he won the Salima six times and the Derby or the Belmont, and I'd sit there all afternoon and listen to him go on and on. So we've mended that bridge.
Speaking with Hall of Famer trainer Wayne Lucas, he was inducted into the Hall of Fame in 1999, won four Kentucky Derbies, 88 with Winning Colors, 95 with Thunder Gulch, 96 with Grindstone, 99 with Charismatic, almost 5,000 career training wins as of right now, and you've got chances in both the Kentucky Oaks and Kentucky Derby this year. A couple of longer prices. I don't know if Just Steel and Lemon Muffin are going to give you quite the confidence you had with Winning Colors, but you got to be in it to win it. So let's talk about Just Steel. He ran a sneaky good second in the Arkansas Derby last time out, surprised a lot of people that day. Seems to be headed the right direction.
I think you've analyzed that right. I think if you watch the Arkansas Derby, two things. He had, when he switched leads at the top of the stretch, the ground gave away from him, and he lost his stride and his momentum, and he came back to run at a mute. And but after that race was over, some of the handicap geniuses rated that prep race, smart meaning the Arkansas Derby, really high. And I think that it sent us to the Derby with a lot more confidence. You know, what you try to do as a trainer is you don't want to be right in the 1st of April. You want to be right on the first Saturday in May.
Well, the horses that you've run in the Derby over the years are usually top-quality horses. I'll never forget Thunder Gulch, though. I mean, he came off the van by the horse hospital there at Santa Anita one day, and I followed him all the way to your barn, and I said to Kim Davis, who the hell is that? And she says it's a horse called Thunder Gulch. And I picked him. The trainers had a fantasy draft, a fantasy stable draft, and I drafted him first. Nobody knew who he was, and he ends up winning the Kentucky Derby, and I won the whole pot. So thank you for that. But, I mean, it was just amazing to see that horse. I'll never forget that day as long as I live. I never saw a horse come off a van looking like they were ready to win tomorrow.
You know, he was an amazing little horse, and you think of it, he won the Fountain of Youth, the Florida Derby, then he had a bad race in the Bluegrass, came back and won the Kentucky Derby, he missed the Preakness and came back and won the Belmont, went out and won the Swaps, then came back and won the Haskell, and then he won the Traverse. So, I mean, you try that with a horse now, and you'd get fired.
That's right. Well, you have the horse with 11 starts, the most starts in the Derby. You're running Just Steel, and that's old school. That's great.
Well, I worked him a mile before the Arkansas Derby, and I worked him a mile here the other day. I was real pleased with it. He's a big horse, Ed. He's 17 hands, and I felt like his development. I was surprised when he won a little 6-furlong stake here, but He needed to go out there and in order to be competitive and everything. And these are new clients, brand new. And I know that their heart's in the Kentucky Derby and these classics. So I thought the most important thing I could do is get him ready.
Well, speaking of clients, you had one of the most recognizable flamboyant clients of all time with Gene Klein for many, many years, speaking of Winning Colors. What are some of your fondest memories of Mr. Klein?
Well, with Gene Klein, everything he touched turned to gold. If I'd have bought a burro, it'd have been the fastest burro in the world. But the he really had the Midas touch in the racing. The Super Bowl evaded him at the Chargers, the San Diego Chargers, but the racing really came together for him. He had so many good horses, and he was the kind of guy that would really, really tell you how he thought. You know, he'd say, now listen, cowboy, if you don't produce, I'll jerk the rug from underneath you so fast that you make your head spin. You know, he was that kind of guy. He had that locker room mentality. And a lot of times he got a little bit out of hand. He would, if we were in Lexington at the Keeneland or something, and the hard boots, the old traditional hard boots would be in there, he'd say, you bastards better fasten your seat belts because we're going to kick your ass today. And it didn't always go over very good.
He was a character. He had that glint in his eye all the time, too, when he was teasing people. I love the way he would look at you, just like, yeah, I'm just kind of pulling your leg.
Wayne, you also send out Lemon Muffin on Friday in this year's Kentucky Oaks. She looked great in the Honeybee two starts back and then really threw in a clunker last time in the Fantasy. Did she have an excuse for that race?
Yeah, she was she wasn't herself. We thought that she was really flat after the race, and then the other thing that happened is the next morning she just didn't seem to be herself. Didn't have a temperature, but she was a little bit flat. You got to just throw it out. Since then, she's really training strong.
When fillies get in those kind of little funks, happens every once in a while. Sometimes it's hard to get them out, so it's good that she's turned it around.
Yeah, I feel real comfortable. She worked 58-2 this week. So, you know, I think she's pretty much on her game.
Wayne, you've been doing this a long time and been doing it well a long time. What is the biggest difference getting horses for the Derby now as opposed to 35, 40 years ago when you were doing it in the 80s?
Well, I think I can speak for the whole training colony. The thing that is different now is that these breeders have found that if a horse looks fast or is fast in the two-year-old preview sales and so forth, he sells well. So we're getting horses that probably are more adapt to a mile than they are a mile and a quarter. So the challenge I see now is even though you buy one that you think's got the pedigree, most of the time they – at the time I buy, at least, are a challenge at a mile and a quarter. So I think that's going to happen to a lot of the younger trainers. They'll find out that these horses stretching them out, is difficult.
Has it changed the way that you look at yearlings when you go buy them? Do you still buy the ones with the big hind quarters where all the power comes from?
I still buy that type. I can't help myself. Those long back horses with no loin strength or anything never appeal to me. And Just Steel is an absolute picture. You could put him out there and hold a clinic on what one is supposed to look like. He has a classic mother too. His mother won the Guineas in Australia, grade one Guineas. She was a classic winner. So he's got a brilliant pedigree for this game.
You mentioned that you're training for new owners right now, owners of Just Steel, BC Stables, and Henry Schmeckel. What kind of Derby fever do they have being here for the first time?
They're pretty low key. They'll have a big crowd and everything, but they're kind of low key about the whole thing. I can tell they're excited. They've been Brian Quelo, the one partner, has been here every morning at 4 o'clock and watching all of the babies go. We're loaded up next year. We're really loaded next year. I shouldn't be saying that, but we are. And they've been watching all their horses go. And, I'll be 90 when these run that we just got up. And it's going to be more exciting.
Well, Wayne, we know you're busy. You've got, what do you have, about 40 horses here at Churchill? So, yeah. It's certainly important what's going on Friday and Saturday with the Oaks and the Derby, but the rest of the business does not stop. How hard is that for you with so many horses under your care to, you know, kind of keep it business as usual, even when this week it really isn't?
Well, that's just a small, a small number for me. I mean, I go through these, you know, have a coffee break and keep right on rolling. What I've done at this stage, I'm going to be 89 the 1st of September, and I have made a decision to keep the stable at 40 or less. I've turned down horses. I do not want to get it bigger than one barn where I can train every horse, you know, without worrying about making an airplane trip to, you know, the Belmont or Santa Anita or someplace. So it's really easy for me. The thing that I really like is that running them on these 2 days, on Friday and Saturday, it's a long, boring day for a trainer, sitting around waiting for the race. And you've talked about it for 2 weeks solid, and now you say, hell, let's just run it. And so I run as many horses as I can. I think on Thursday I got five in, and I don't know, three or four on Derby Day. And I like to run a lot of them so we can keep the action up.
Well, Wayne, we really appreciate taking the time. You've had a fantastic career. Hopefully there'll be still more to come, and maybe this Friday and Saturday will be big additions for you as well. Thank you so much, Wayne. Have a great Kentucky Oaks and Kentucky Derby.
Thank you, guys. I always enjoy your show. Take care.
There is nothing like listening to Dwayne Lucas talk about horse racing. I could listen to Dwayne Lucas read the phone book. His stories are so, so good. We now go from Wayne, a four-time Derby winner, to trainer Chad Brown, who has saddled 2,612 winners in his career, four-time Eclipse Award winner, but he has yet to add the Derby to his resume. He's hoping it happens this year.
Chad, you're always a busy man, but nothing has changed as far as Oaks and Derby goes. Two runners in the Oaks, regulatory risk in Ways and Means. Two runners in the Derby, Sierra Leone and Domestic Product. You've been a major player in big races for years, not only here in this country, but all over. What do these two races, how do they differ from other big races?
Well, when you're dealing with Kentucky Derby, it's just, you know, it's right at the top of the list for a trainer. Obviously, we haven't won it. We've been close. But when you set out to do this job, that's really your dream, is to try to win the Kentucky Derby. So I'm just happy to be here with two good horses.
Yeah, how fortunate is that to have the quality that you have going into these two races? I mean, hardly ever happens, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's so you're dealing with, 18,000 foals born a year, and then as you start to whittle it down and get down to a 20-horse starting gate, I mean, you're really dealing with a very select, rare group of horses that can make it. You know, when you think about those numbers, to have two really good shots in the race and ownership of two of my biggest supporters, you know, obviously Seth Klarman owning one horse, and then Peter Brandt being part of the ownership group of the other horse. Between those two individuals, they're the two biggest clients I have, and those two have all of their U.S.-based horses just with me. So to be able to bring them to this race with a real chance to win is very rewarding for me. It just makes me feel like me and my team are doing a good job for them.
They seem like very even-keeled owners, but do they get a little bit amped up when they know that they have big chances in the biggest race in the world?
Well, they're competitive. I think that would go for nearly all horse owners. I mean, when you're dealing with professional sports, you know, and if you're not competitive and involved and interested and always learning about, you know, the process and what it takes to win, then you're probably in the wrong sport. So both clients and friends are, they know quite a bit. They have a ton of experience owning horses, and they've had some really big moments. They've had some bad phone calls and some disappointments. And if you own horses long enough, you'll experience all of it. And again, just to be here with these horses is really, I just feel humbled and appreciative.
The ownership group of Sierra Leone is like the who's who of racing. I mean, it's ridiculous when you look at the owner line. I mean, you just, wow.
Yeah, each individual owner of this horse has made massive contributions to the industry. These are experienced owners. They're gentlemen. They They're a really great group. There's no, it's no surprise that they're the biggest, most powerful, successful global operation in our industry in the world, Coolmore. And they have a great approach with their trainers. I've had just a few horses over the years. It's always been a really great experience. They give you plenty of room to make decisions, to manage the horses. They always do the right thing by the horses. It's never a question. The timetable, you never ask to push a horse on. And this group, for all the contributions they've made, not only sales, breeding, racing, they're wonderful partners, advertising to many different companies and organizations within the industry. They're huge philanthropists, every single one of the owners. You can go and look at what they've donated, how generous they are. They'd be deserving winners.
Speaking with trainer Chad Brown, he's got Sierra Leone and domestic product in the Kentucky Derby, ways and means regulatory risk in the Oaks. All right, looking at those four runners, what is a perfect trip Friday and Saturday to get each of those runners to the finish line first?
Yeah, starting on the inside, Sierra Leone, I'm happy I'm in the inside half of the field. He's quite far down there, but I did not want to be outside with this horse. I mean, generally with my horses that come from behind, I don't want wide trips on both turns. It really takes away from their kick, in my experience. So a nice ground-saving trip, if he can break out of there and follow the speed horse that's on the inside of him, at least to the first turn, I'm hopeful to get ahead of a few horses in this field down on the inside. And just once they level off down the backside, not be too far away. To give him a chance. Then it just comes down to working a trip out from there, not getting stopped. With domestic product, I think he's drawn well for his style. He's got plenty of speed. He won't be in that first flight battling for the lead, but if he breaks clean, he should be in the second flight. And then for him, just guiding over, if Irad can just find a way to save a little bit of ground on that first turn. If he breaks clean, he has enough speed to sort of accelerate into the position or hole, if you will, that he wants.
We were talking to Danny Gargan about being drawn on the rail, and I told him having Sierra Leone outside of him was an advantage to his horse. But I think your horse has an advantage having Danny Gargan's horse on the rail because they're going to go. I mean, he pretty much said that right before you were on the air. He said, we're going. So that's going to give you a lot of space to maneuver for the first part of the race. I think that's a big edge for your horse.
I think potentially I think that could happen, and I agree with you. I'd like a little bit of an alleyway, if you speak, if you will, into that first turn to give him a little bit of room. I have a big, you know, good-sized horse here. If I can just have a clear path in that first turn and everyone assemble and all the jockeys safely just pick their positions, and hopefully we'll have a clean run race.
Your horse is a beast. I mean, he's so powerful. I just love watching him go.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, he's always been that way, you know, since he came in about, you know, June of his two-year-old year, the first couple days took him the track, you could see this horse just moved different than the other ones around. A big, long, powerful stride.
Ways and Means is going to get play, as she always does. I think she's been 3-5 or less in all three of her races, and, you know, a blowout win first time out and some narrow defeats following that. Didn't get out of the gate all that well last time out in the Gulfstream Park Oaks. Reason to think that she'll be better here, second start of the year?
I would hope so. She's got a lot of natural speed. She's had some difficulty out the gates. Those two defeats she had really rough trips. She's coming to the race good. She works super on Friday, maybe just a touch quick, but she did it easy. She's a very, very rare talent, and I just hope she breaks clean and gets a good forward spot.
By the way, Danny Gargan told us to not worry about how fast she went, that the track is playing a second to a second and a half faster than any other racetrack, so her 46-1 was more like 47 and change.
I'd agree with him, though. The track was playing very fast for those couple of days we were breezing the horses, and once I got to reflect on all the works from that morning, I would agree with him that it made me feel a little better. There were so many horses, you know, under a minute working 5 A's.
Well, we know you're a busy guy, Chad, and you got a lot of stuff still to tend to at the barn. Really appreciate you taking the time out of your busy schedule. Best of luck Friday and Saturday, not only in the Oaks and Derby, but all of the other big races as well.
Thank you. I'll be happy to come back when I have some more time.
Man, Chad Brown, just so, so good every time you get a chance to let him talk about his horses, and he starts going on about their accolades and what makes them so successful. He's a very, very smart trainer, 2-time Preakness winner, 4-time Eclipse Award winner, but yet to break through in the Kentucky Derby. You have to feel like there's a Derby with Chad's name on it somewhere. Maybe this is the year. Sierra Leone, so, so talented. Will he handle the crowd, the pressure? Will Sierra Leone be able to navigate a good trip from back in the pack? That's the key for him. We'll find out on Saturday, 72 hours away from the Run for the Roses. My thanks to all those guests, to Bobby and to Jude for hosting those Breeders' Cup, or excuse me, Derby Countdown shows live from Churchill Downs this week. Head back to the website, horseracingradio.net. Check out the podcast whenever you get some time. And follow us on social media as well, at HRRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram. My thanks to my producer, Lee Delapina, in our Lexington studios, to Chauncey for all of his production of the Countdown shows throughout the week. I'm Mike Pena. Thanks for listening to Trainer Talk, presented by Faisic Tipton. Enjoy the Oaks. Enjoy the Derby.